Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Catherine Pacifica, she's a young Irish novelist. She's before me here. Welcome, studio, Catherine. I'm going to tell people about This Is How You Remember It. I've already been raving about it this morning, but people are raving about it. The reviews, it moved one critic in the Guardian newspaper to write her review in the first person, which is a very unusual move. And she finishes the review saying, "It is an essential document." It's a novel she's talking about. "I wish it wasn't. I'm so glad it exists." The London Independent reviewer, I think she said it, "This is the first book I've read that beautifully, heartbreakingly evokes what it's like to grow up as a girl on the internet. Spoiler alert, it's panic attacking." And I'll just go to the acknowledgements here, because you say, "For a long time now, I've been thinking about the effect of social media on my life and doing my best to explore it in my work." That's what you've done with this, isn't it?
That's what I've tried to do. Yeah. I mean, I think social media is something that has had a profound effect on my life and the life of my generation. And the book is written, you know, This Is How You Remember It. It's written in recollection. And I think it's only really possible to see the effects through recollection. You know,
yes,
looking back
afterwards
and seeing, wait, what actually happened? Because when that first phone is handed to a child, particularly as it was to me, or rather I begged for it. My parents did not willingly hand me the phone. But
as is the case, a lot of parents
yes,
are nodding
please,
along.
Please,
going,
please.
Because you don't
but
know.
But you don't know. And particularly, you know, 10 years ago, you know, even before smartphones, you couldn't predict the effect that putting a phone in a child's hand could have had. So that's why it's written in recollection and called This Is How You Remember It. Because I think as you're living it, you have no idea.
And you're Gen Z, so you're literally born...
I'm a late millennial. I'm the last of the millennials.
Oh, you squeeze in,
yeah,
do you?
Just about on the cusp. And I have older siblings, so that puts me in millennial category. But okay. I'm not cool enough to be Gen Z. I still wear ankle socks. The Gen Zers will be like,
is that right? Okay.
Will be like, oh yeah, okay.
I didn't even know that's a thing. But
it's
you're
a thing,
in
it's a thing.
This is your, you've already had a best-selling novel. It's your second novel, which is also about the internet. So this is a theme in your work. Why do you think so much about it, and why do you think so much about the effect it's had on your life, do you think?
Well, when I was writing my first book, I was thinking, I was, 22 or 3 starting to write it, and I thought, I'm not going to write the best book of all time, but I'm going to write a book that I can write. And I was kind of, dissatisfied with how I saw social media portrayed, you know, through fiction, on screen. I was thinking, someone's missing something here, and maybe it takes someone of my age to actually communicate what that thing is. And I'm sure someone younger than me is going to come along and be like, well, actually, this is what the internet is. But I'm waiting for them to come along. But I think it's something that I perhaps am uniquely able to talk about, and I felt was worthwhile. Mm. And I also think it's something that has fundamentally changed the way we interact with ourselves, with each other, with reality, you know, particularly for young people. And it felt for me then very important to write about it.
And there are perfect examples of the kid with the phone and the internet not seeing things around them all, totally consumed by this and wondering what their friends are up to, when they're in a nice, beautiful place and people who love them and so on, not being present.
Tunnel vision into the universe of the screen, which I think is something that we've all experienced. Because something that I'm careful to point out as well is that while I think young people are maybe the most prolific users of the internet, and the internet is something that young people perhaps know more about than their parents, we all have large amount of screen time. We're all on our phones constantly, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours a day looking at this one thing.
That's right,
and there are birds in the sky, you know, there's grass on the ground, and we're just
other
oblivious.
Other humans
to talk to in person.
You've described yourself as part of the guinea pig generation. What do you mean by that?
I think, as I said, young people are some of the most prolific users of the internet. We have just a lot of free time, I suppose. And I feel I really did grow up online at a time when there was very little knowledge, very little parental control. You know, in the book, it kind of explores that idea of the parents don't even know the right questions to ask to get the answers that they're looking for. They couldn't even begin to imagine the answers that they might be given were they to know the questions, you know. And I think that is the world that I grew up in, and that generations beneath me are going to grow up in as well. Now there's a little bit more awareness. You know, millennials are starting to have children who are starting to go on the internet and that kind of thing. But I think it's always going to be something that has passed maybe bottom up. And we're always going to be playing catch up. And
I think
I think I was the first generation to really experience that.
So the millennials who grew up on the internet, they think they know everything and they'll be able to chat to their kids, but their kids believe that, of course, their parents know nothing.
Yes, yeah.
And you won't know the half of what's happening.
Yeah, particularly with the algorithms online. You know, there are, like, the internet itself used to be a subculture. To be online, you were part of a culture, a community. Yeah. And now it's fractured. The monoculture is broken. If you're really into, I don't know, like Estonian rap, you're going to find 10,000 people to talk to
and
about it online.
In that world,
and you can live entirely in that world, sitting in Dublin, which
and
you couldn't have before.
And not know what's going on in
and not know,
Irish
you know,
culture.
What's happening in even mainstream internet culture, you know. And I think it's based on interest, but it's also based on age. So I wrote this article, you know, about communication online, but also name dropping Skibidi Toilet, which I thought was very funny to get that in the Irish Times. But that was something that, like, blew my mind when I heard about it, because it is this meme that is popular only with the Generation Alpha, you know, who are 14 years and below. Okay. And it's like a head singing in a toilet. It's kind of bizarre stuff. But you look it up on YouTube. You think I'm joking. It's called Skibidi Toilet. You look it up. Thousands of videos, hundreds of millions of views.
It's a phenomenon.
It's a phenomenon. It's a global phenomenon that nobody over the age of 15 knows about.
Good Lord.
Yeah, so people in your house, you're looking at the phone.
I didn't know about that until then.
Yeah, you're looking at your phone, you're looking at the screen, you're thinking, oh, well, sure, we're all on, I don't know, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all these same apps or whatever it is, but we're engaging with them in very different ways and becoming more and more divided, you know?
Yeah. Did you say they're alpha? Is that what we're...
Generation Alpha.
We're starting at the start.
Apparently.
Again.
Apparently. I didn't coin that.
Okay. Well, we'll have to watch out for that one. But like, they've grown up, the YouTube is television for them. There's
yes,
no television.
Yeah.
The idea that that's television is scheduled and you sit down at a certain time.
Yeah. And
totally
there are
alien.
Ad breaks. The form of television has completely changed. But that's the thing when you're talking about the internet. I think there are so many things that we take for granted as, well, that's just how the world is. You know, that's just how it is. And then you talk to a child and it's not. Like, you know the way, oh, you answer the phone, you do the hand gesture with, you know, your thumb and your little finger. No, kids put their hand against their face.
They don't know
it's a smartphone.
Yes, okay. They don't know what
it's
that is.
Fundamental little things that are changing. Well, we don't like answering the phone.
Don't use the phone as a phone.
No. Why would you?
Come here to me. The novel starts with the child and there's the unboxing of the big computer. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lovely, evocative stretch of innocence at the very start. So you're down at the beach, the family go to the beach and so on. So it begins with the kind of the unboxing of this giant computer in the mm-hmm. house and the innocent dabbling of the internet. We all start screaming when suddenly the search engine starts suggesting, filling in the words. Explain to us what's going on there in the poor child.
Well, there's a lot, I think, because for me, what I was thinking about my own internet experience was that the internet used to be a place. It used to be something that you sat down at and you could then leave. And then when I was thinking about the desktop computer and that being set up in one part of the house, normally in, you know, a communal room, people are coming and going. Completely different to the idea of having a smartphone, you know, or an iPad or something like that. It's very much anchored. So there's that. And I also kind of wanted to get across the idea that I think the internet has fundamentally changed as well. It used to be something that you dictated. You would say, you know, show me pictures of a unicorn. You would say, I want to go on a Harry Potter fan site. You would search, you know, mini clip games or something. And it would maybe correct your spelling on it, but it would show you what you were looking for. Mm-hmm. Now the internet tells you what you should be doing, you know, through algorithms.
That's a really good observation.
I no longer think, oh, maybe I'm going to get into crochet. My TikTok feed just says, hey, do you think you should do some crochet? Do you know? We've kind of ceded agency to some degree. And I think...
And they use a lovely word, suggestion.
Yeah.
So we're
just
suggesting these things.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I think in the age of surveillance capitalism, Shoshana Zuboff calls it behavioral certainty. The idea that they know so much about you on a microscopic level that if they nudge you, you jump. And that's something they can sell to advertisers, which I think is not very good.
The Orwellian view of the world was that the government would put a camera in your room and watch you forcefully. Little did Orwell know, we would volunteer.
Love the camera, you know, and we do
everywhere.
Dances in front of it.
Nobody forced the camera on, and we just decided to do it ourselves.
But I thought it was very important to trace that evolution of technology, right? Mm. That movement from place and from discovery with its own, you know, pitfalls and perils as well that definitely exist there. But trace that into that kind of slow seeding of agency until you no longer really see the screen. Yeah. It becomes reality. You know, I think the internet is a technology almost in the way that the written word is a technology, which it was at the time when people started writing things down. It was huge. It changed absolutely everything. But people ask me now, like, oh, how's your relationship with the internet? And I think you should be treating that question like, how's your relationship with text? You know, it's so ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's changed everything mm-hmm. to the point of becoming invisible to us.
Right. It's just, it's air.
It's just, yeah. Yeah. It's just fundamental fabric of the universe now, somehow.
We can't move without it. It can't be switched off.
And even if you were to switch it off, the internet is so pervasive in society. Sure, like, you're recording me right now for posting on social media, you know. So it's there. But at any point in time, someone can take out a recording device, take a video of you, put it on Instagram. You could go viral and you at no point have been online.
It's brilliant. It's beautiful. It brings geniuses to the world. It has created geniuses and allowed geniuses to flourish, I suppose. Mm. And there's wonderful things about it. And we wouldn't know a lot of news if it wasn't for the internet. But the teenager, because we grow up with this character in the story, she is there at the burgeoning beginning of social media. Take us from there.
I was thinking a lot about, you know, being a teenager is hard, first of all. But I think being a teenager online is maybe a little bit harder, and that there are some experiences that only exist online but have fundamental offline effects as well, or that maybe there are certain ways that the online world amplifies in-person experiences as to change them entirely. You know, online there's so much you can read into, whether or not someone accepts your Facebook friend request was like a big one. How long someone takes to reply, you know, how many messages they send you, all of this is fair game for interpretation online that makes, you know, being a teenager and communicating with your friends terrible. There's a scene in it where her friend has left her Facebook logged in and she's able to read messages sent between her friend and another girl.
That's right. Devastating.
And that's devastating messages. That can't exist without the internet, you know. I mean, maybe you could hear gossip or something like that. But, you know, all of these types of things that just really crystallize your experience as a teenager, I really want to showcase that, because I think there's this idea when I was growing up that, you know, you can just turn off your phone or just don't pay attention to it. It's just the internet. Mm. But I wanted to kind of showcase, well, no, it's life. It's no different to offline. And in fact, in some ways can be worse, you know, and that's what I wanted to put in the book.
Did it make the teenage experience any different? Because a lot of the things that happened, were they just transferred from the real world onto Facebook? Did it make things worse? What's your view when you look back at it now? Because
I think it's hard to know. I think maybe in 100 years someone will have an answer for you, do you know?
Because it was always shunning and bullying and all of those things without the internet, without social media.
Yeah, I think in some ways it just maybe amplified them. But then on a deeper level, I think there were fundamental changes. So,
and
what
a record
I was,
of it.
Yes. And what I was looking at is, say, each technology that I used, you know, during my life has primed me for the next technology that I'm going to use, to the point where it feels nearly just natural. Like, you know, going from one lily pad to the next as a frog, slowly going to be hit by a truck. I don't know why I went for the Frogger reference there, but that's a niche internet
joke. It is.
But just you're slowly, you know, you're the frog in the boiling water or whatever it is, and it just kind of makes sense. But I was looking at the kind of the learned behaviors. So when you go to the internet for answers, you know, when did Napoleon die? You know, how did Vikings bury their dead or whatever it is? The internet throws up a factual answer. But I was kind of thinking there's so many forums online of people asking these questions that the internet doesn't know. You know, why won't he text me back? Is my friend mad at me? What is this mole? Do you know, those kind of things. And we're looking for concrete answers, and we're kind of primed to believe that we're going to be interpreting fact. And I think when you're a teenager, you are just understanding the world. You have so many questions. You ask the internet responds. But what is the internet telling you to be? Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what the book is.
I love that line. It says, you know there are things the internet cannot answer, but that doesn't stop you from trying. The sum total of the human experience is distilled into the questions you ask Google in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
That is so true. And the big difference, we're talking about what's the difference between pre-internet and afterwards, is of course the algorithms have, it's become a new tool for all the bad things, and it's become very profitable for companies that have become very quickly more powerful than whole countries, whole continents. And that's where the problem is, because they double down.
Yeah.
And there is no escape.
And they have no financial incentive to like relinquish our attention. No. And we all know that negative engagement fuels more engagement than positive engagement. You see a cute picture of a dog, someone says cute dog, conversation ends.
Yeah.
You see a photo, someone leaves a hate comment, then there's the backlash to the hate comment and the backlash to the backlash and the backlash to that. That gets amplified.
That gets the data.
That gets the engagement.
Oil, as we know now.
That gets the attention. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, okay, we're living somehow in a reality whereby that is what is most profitable. And young people being the most prolific users, somehow we've created an economy that is based off of making teenagers anxious.
Mm.
And I think something that I always want to say on this is that, again, I grew up with this narrative of like, just get off your phone, or, you know, seeing the, you know, addicted to social media young girl, and isn't she vapid and whatever. But this isn't a world that I ever consented to live in. This isn't one that I've ever had any agency over. You know, I haven't created these apps. I'm making no money from these things. It's the generation above me and above that that is always
making the money.
If you're not
honest, you're actually not in the community of your
peers. You're not in the community. And there are very good things about the internet. But I think we're moving more into this kind of profit-driven, scary sphere, as opposed to, you know, the community-based kind of grassroots, sometimes anonymous sphere that the internet used to be, maybe in like the 2000s, you know.
What's really interesting is that, and you mentioned it at the end in your acknowledgements of how you kind of created the storyline for this character, which is all in the second person. So you really want the reader to feel like that we were a girl, are a girl who grew up on the internet.
Yes.
It's from a collection of your friends and people you know that you
sat
down and
things
chatted.
That I was aware of and things like that. But the book kind of started from just questions I was asking my friends of, well, did you ever experience anything online, perhaps when you were too young, that fundamentally shaped who you were, that you can't get out of your head now? And nearly every single person said,
really,
yes, I have this story, I have this. And it just got me thinking about, I suppose, the capacity for harm on the online, and what that does to your sense of self. And I think I've had some funny reactions to the book, and that everyone kind of my generation and younger has said, this is so true, get out of my brain, I do remember it, oh my God. And everyone older than me is like, I'm terrified. Please tell me this is not what it's like. And, you know, I suppose the title is a bit accusatory. And in the beginning, it opens with, you do remember it, don't you? Why don't you? Because we all do. And if you don't remember it, but yet you facilitated a world where we were forced to live it. You
know, this is how you remember.
This is how you remember. This is what it was like.
There's a bit of hope there towards the end, to be fair.
Yeah, I think I always, people ask me, would you not be nice about the internet, you know? And I love my phone. I love having my phone 6 inches from my face, scrolling, dog video, meme. I love it, you know? And I have a lot of friends that I keep in touch with only online. There's a lot of very, very good things. But I think it's maybe about intention and about how can we get our agency back from the internet? How can we be, you know, more mindful of what we are doing and what we are sharing? And I think that comes from deconstructing how the internet has changed things for us, you know, how it kind of reduces everything to clickable, shareable content, including the most fundamental elements of the human experience and human connection and all those kind of things. So I feel negative, but I'm hopeful that we can maybe start moving in a better direction.
Yeah. And there's sometimes people will accuse you of hypocrisy if you criticize Facebook or so and so on. And then you're on it. You're on Instagram. But of course, there is a contract there, isn't there? As the famous, you said, the product is free, then you're the price, basically.
Yeah.
And there's a contract that they're supposed to use our data well and so on. It's an unbelievable story. I think parents of small children are going to be worried, as you've kind of pointed out. Parents of teenagers are probably going to say, oh yeah, this feels familiar. This was like living with them. And I think parents themselves will probably recognise themselves towards the end, is what I hope. And there's a great part in it where the kid, the mum is trying to have a chat with the teenage girl. And I said, well, the mum's not going to understand anything. She doesn't even know how to copy and paste. What are you talking about?
That's, sorry, mum. I know she's listening. But that's the one thing that I always have to help her do, copy and paste into emails. You know, but I think that kind of feeds into kind of what I've been saying of, I think there is a complete generational divide. But, you know, my mother never knew, you know, the questions to ask me. And sure, if you've ever received a PDF from my father, no, you haven't. That was me. I had to convert that to the PDF. You know, so it's that technology is there. But look, I'm not trying to scare anyone, really. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to do was accurately depict the truth, or how I saw it, or how my friends kind of see it, you know. And I think for me, it felt important to write because I think it's such a specific experience of growing up that kind of doesn't really feel real or felt very difficult to put into fiction, because we have an idea of how novels function and how stories and novels function, and they follow certain paths, and they're kind of, it's kind of difficult to get social media in there because it's such a change to the usual kind of growing up narrative. And I wanted to just have a go, I suppose, at kind of forcing that change into the novel. And I always write with a idea of communicating something.
You have a motivation behind it, and mm-hmm. I hope it's not lost in our conversation that there is a fantastic plot. And I didn't think a man in my 40s, I'd be going, is she going to talk to Lorcan again?
Yeah.
What's going on with Fiona? What's happening in these guys? It was like kind of like a roller coaster Netflix series aimed at millennials, but for the older bunch of us, we're getting this insight into the older mind, maybe.
Yeah.
This is how you remember. That's what's called Catherine Prasifka. It's been an absolute pleasure. The best of luck with it. Well, you're getting rave reviews already, so you'll be fine. The publisher is Canongate.
Yes.
Canongate. Good luck with it. We'll chat to you again, and I hope the campaign works. But at least we're entertained along the way.
Thank you.
Good luck, and thanks a million. 51551 is the text.
Email oliver@rte.ie.